יהיו לרצון אמרפי וגיוני בלפניך אדוני צורי וגואלי. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all. Welcome to our Kosher Torah school. Presently we are teaching the Kabbalistic traditions as brought to us by Rabbi Yosef Haim from his book called Dat Utfuna. And I am, of course, your host, Ariel Bar-Tzedok. You find me and the Kosher Torah School online at www.koshertorah.com. We're presently in the fourth lesson in this series. We're in chapter 19 in this very interesting Hebrew text. I've given a number of introductions in the previous classes, and there is no need to repeat them. So for those of you who might feel you might be missing some of the more, well, let's just say, fundamental background stuff, check the other classes. We are making references to concepts, terminologies, and the like, which we have discussed in other classes and other series. Some of them are available for free in our Kosher Torah free audio library online, and some of them, of course, are available for purchase in our Kosher Torah online store. So if you are not familiar with the terminology and concepts, please note, I cannot always go back and repeat myself. You're going to have to pick up and get the concepts. You're going to have to get, as they say, get the lingo down. So anyway, we are now discussing the levels of what are called the machatzavim. Okay? A machatzav is a domain, a level. It comes from the root to chatzav, which is to like carve out and engrave something. It's kind of based upon the concept of emanation, right? Emanation is one thing coming forth from another. This is a fundamental concept in theoretical Kabbalah. You will also, of course, find the same concept in its original forms in Neoplatonic and Platonic literature. One should not consider, because there are sources there that detracts from the material. Not at all. On the contrary, it adds truer universal value to it. An emanation, what is that? Well, think of it as, if you will, like a diluting property. If you have something which is 100% strong, and in its full form is too strong, well, you got to dilute it. So you dilute it to, for example, 10%. And at a certain level, what you're dealing with can handle the 10% dilution. But then you got to apply it to another level. So you have to dilute it further. So you dilute the 10% down 10%, which is actually only 1% of the original. And then if you needed to, you'd have to dilute it even further to get it down to 1/10 of 1% of the original. 10% of the 10% of the 10%. Now, the original essence is there. However, it is not in its full, if you will, potency. A machtsav, again, we can call a domain. Is this domain a place? Well, again, if we're going to define place within any kind of geographic definition, then the answer most likely is no. And why do I say most likely? Simply because no one has ever really been to this or that place to be able to definitively say this or that about anything. And that's a very important point that we must understand. When we're talking about the theoretical Kabbalah, we're talking about relationships, We are talking about grades and levels and emanations. Is there any physical in our physical concept application to these things? You can interpret the literature to actually mean, yes, there are. But then again, you can interpret the literature in opposite way to say, no, there are not. It's interesting. When you read something, it all depends on the eye of the beholder. Well, that is why you have commentary. That is why you have different opinions and different views. Our job as scholars is not to decide which opinion or which view is the correct one because I feel it, I sense it, or whatever, whatever. But rather, to acknowledge, understand that there are different ways of looking at different things. So, let us read in our text in chapter 19, in our discussion of the different domains and the context of what we're discussing, obviously will become clear as we read. Picking up from where we left off, Rabbi Yosef Haim, remember, is quoting the works and words of Rabbi Haim Vital. So, to explain what we have not explained before, v'hu. Ki komo shezeh ha'ur miyuhad nikra olam esesvirot betumunat adam echad. Just like we said, that there is a unique light, which is called the world, domain, dimension, level, of the ten sefirot in the image of a singular man. We'll explain that in a minute. Ken yesh od or acher. There's another light, hanikra, which is called the machtsab haneshamot shel bnei adam, the domain of the souls of the children of human beings. V'nichalal memash, and it includes within it, v'kol otam prateha bechinot, it includes within it every single detailed aspect. Shenitpa'er b'dam shel eses sfirot, shehu nikra elohut gemur, the element of what we called the image of man, of the ten sefirot, which we said is complete divinity. Now, what on earth are we talking about? All right, let's stop here because it's very, very important that we understand terms. When we speak of God, what can we really say about God? The answer, honestly, is nothing. All right? If we really want to understand God, well, we can look at God only from a specific and, I emphasize, limited point of view. What is that specific and limited point of view? Obviously, we can only understand God within the context of our own humanity. In other words, everything that I am going to perceive of God is going to be within the context of my mind, and my mind is only human. This is the secret of what we call God's backside. You might remember the episode narrated in the book of Exodus, wherein which Moses asked God, "Let me see your glory." And God said, "No man can see my face and live." Meaning that the human mind has finite limitations is the construct and parameters of consciousness. It's only so much you're going to be able to grasp. Now, are we potentially able to expand consciousness? The answer, of course, is yes. But remember, the expansion of consciousness means that it's conscious. It does not mean that you have an emotional sense, a feeling sense, an inner conviction. No. Consciousness means it's out in the open, or what we call Orot HaMigulim, the revealed lights. That means it is clear, rational, understood, definitive. Now, I'll give you an example of consciousness. Do we have an understanding of the way of the universe? An understanding of it? Yes. And usually we describe such understandings in rather poetic or artistic terms. Have any of you ever read such beautiful literature like the Tao Te Ching of Lao Tzu? All right? Very beautiful way of describing the universal way. You'll find such beautiful poetic renditions in cultures around the world, even in our Torah tradition. But it's not definitively describing things clearly. On the contrary, it itself says that it can never be clear within that context, and it cannot be. So, you can follow the Tao, or follow the way, and on a hot and humid summer's day, you could sit outside in the 90 degree heat and 100 degree humidity, schwitzing yourself wet, contemplating things. Or you can take advantage of human consciousness, which has looked at the way of nature, understand how it works and operates, and created an apparatus, which of course we call air conditioning. And then you could sit in the air-conditioned domain in a much comfortabler environment and again sit and think about things. And I will tell you this, if you want to sit with your eyes closed and contemplate the universe, you will only understand so much. If you want to look at a manual and understand the physics and the technology of air conditioning, you will learn a lot more about God's creation. That is a lesson that we taught, if you will remember, from our Duties of the Heart class as well. The necessity of understanding science, technology and the likes, and recognizing as part and parcel of our Torah tradition. Getting back into our text and its explanation, we speak of the first level of emanation. What can we say about God? Ultimately, nothing. This is even reflected in the words in the Bible, where in which the angels themselves ask, Aye mimkom kivado la'aritzo, where is God's place from where he can be praised? God's ultimate essence is hidden not only from humanity, it's hidden from the highest levels of creation. God's essence, which we called unknowable, or in Hebrew, the Ein Sof, exists outside of creation, and therefore outside of any parameter of consciousness in creation to comprehend. This is a given. Done deal, enough said. Well then, if God is so outside and above and beyond, then how do we ever connect? What can we know? The answer is, we know what God reveals of himself in creation. So I might not be able to know God's essence above and beyond creation, but I can see how God acts in creation. And God's actions are referred to as God's names. The ultimate name of God, we say, is Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, which means the ultimate essence of being. The relationship of these names, these actions, refer to elements of revelation of God in creation. We say that they are 10 in number. We refer to them as the Sefirot, go reference the previous classes. And we say that these are emanations of the higher, concealed, unknowable God. If You remember we went into concepts from the Ein Sof, into the Adam Kadmon, into the world of Atzilut. In essence, you have the pure unadulterated, which have to be diluted, and then diluted further. So here we are with creation. Creation exists unto itself, and as we say, creation comes from the Creator. The Creator is above and beyond creation, but yet is connected to creation. The Creator is known and perceived within creation, but the Creator exists obviously above and beyond anything in creation. And therefore, there is that part of the Creator which can be understood within creation, and that part of the Creator which cannot be understood in creation. These are the foundational principles. With regards to the Creator in creation, we say that it is revealed to us, it is emanated to us in the forms of interactive forces. We call them sephirot. We define sephirot in all different ways, and I'm not going to get into that right now. And we say that the sephirot are 10 in number. And why 10? I'm not going to get into that now. We have the classes online at the Kosher Torah School. Go online, look them up. They're available for you in our free audio library. And again, thank you for your support in honoring our learning honor system. But getting back to our text, these 10 sephirot, as it said here, are in the, in quote, image of man. Now, we should never get so egocentric to think that God's form is as a Homo sapien, physical, you know, carnivore, you know, humanoid form here on Earth. No. That is not the case. As we know from the Bible, it says we are created in the divine image. Well, that divine image is said to be an energetic image. It is said to be an image of mind, thought, force, energy. And the essence of our humanity is said to be mind, spirit, force, energy. So yes, may indeed the force be with you. We, our true essence, is the force. The image of God in which we are created is, in quote, the true force. We say the force is made up of the 10 spheres, and that is the, in quote, symbolic image of man. But now, the concept of man, Adam in Hebrew, we must understand in a more technical way. Being that we said that there are, in general, four basic levels of the emanation corresponding to our human experiences, we refer to them to the realm of the intuition, intellect, emotion, and action. Okay? And we say that God's name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei obviously corresponds and is part of all of them. And when we wish to speak of the different level or the different world of each, we take the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei and we spell the individual letters in different ways so as to come up with different numerical values so as to ascribe to each. And we say that there are four ways to spell out the name, giving us the numerical values of 72, 63, 45, and 52, which we refer to by their Hebrew letters as Ab, Sag, Ma, and Ben. The realm of Atzilut, the realm of emanation, the Creator in, or is revealed to, or experienced in creation, is called God's, in quote, metaphorical, small face, because we don't see the whole picture. Like it said to Moses, only see the backside. Well, okay. This, in quotes, symbolic, metaphorical, small face The name of God corresponding to it is spelled numerically 45. Yud Vav Dalet, Hey Aleph, Vav Aleph, Vav Hey Aleph. Numerical 45, Gematria, or I should say in Hebrew, Mem, Hey, the same numerical value as the word Adam. This is the inner image of man. As God is revealed to us within creation, the human soul is an expression of this in the domain of souls. So, there is the higher level of the ten sefirot of Atzilut, and they are in the, in quote, symbolic image of the man, which we said is the name Yud Kevav Kev Ma, the image of the ten sefirot. And consider that from our symbolic point of view as the 100% potent energy. And as we get down to our physical world, pure energy needs to be diluted. This is a simple concept. We see it with regards to sunlight. The light of the sun, as we know from our Earth, I think it's approximately 92, 93 million miles away. The heat of the sun, the radiation of the sun, is so overwhelming and powerful that if we're even a little bit closer, by a million miles or two closer, our Earth would just burn right up. So, we have to be in an approximate, proper proximity to the source in order for our forms of life to exist. So therefore, let's understand that with relationship to the sefirot and the descending or diluting levels of light. So the light of the sun, as it travels through space, needless to say, does not hit our planet with the same intensity that it leaves the sun. We have fields around the Earth which block out certain cosmic rays, which, if hit our Earth, could kill all life on the planet. So there are grades, levels, dilutions. Well, this is then the definition of the relationship of the ultimate light of God and the human soul. The human soul, the source of the human soul, is referred to symbolically as the domain called Olam HaBiri'ah, the world or domain of souls. This is the level wherein which that light of the Creator, which is the universal mind, that's the proper and true way to understand it, the universal way, the universal force, it congeals itself, dilutes itself. So a little spark from that becomes the beginning of something else, which then diversifies. Remember, God is one. There are no multiple gods. There's only one singularity in the universe. That's the foundation of all of Torah, all of Judaism, certainly all of Kabbalah. Singularity. Well, we teach that same lesson of singularity with regards to human souls. All human souls are one in the greater collective. Our present condition prohibits us from recognizing that unity, other than if we go through meditational processes and all the like, then we get a glimpse and an semblance of such unity. But this is something that was even discovered by Carl Jung in understandings of the archetypes of the collective unconscious. Why do we speak of a collective unconscious? The answer is rather simple. Because at the conscious level, we are not conscious of having a hive mind. Right now, you and I are not thinking the same thoughts. Right now, I cannot think in my mind what you had for lunch today. Those thoughts are not open to me at the collective conscious level. However, that does not mean that we cannot have access to understandings at an unconscious level. At the unconscious level, we can indeed have understanding and knowledge. And we tap into these unconscious kinds of experiences in things like dreams and visions, and even sometimes in the crossover and psychosis is like, that's what Jung dealt with. But anyway, getting back onto track. An essence of the original collective name of the universe, force of the universe, name of God, this congeals itself, dilutes itself into that form, and that becomes the source of human souls. And the human soul is in a dimensional plane, again, which we called Birya, and the Birya level is still said to be in a domain, a dimension, above the lower two dimensions called Yetzirah and Asiyah, referred to in the Bible as the heavens and the earth. As we have discussed in many of our previous Kabbalah classes, the heavens and the earth are two parallel dimensions which exist in harmony with one another, like two sides of a coin. We refer to them in the pre-Lurianic Kabbalah as the Du Partsufim. I have classes on that in the Book of the Sacred Tabernacle series online at the Kosher Torah School. Go look up the material there. So, this is the source of the soul. The souls in rabbinic literature are said to emanate from the throne of glory. Now, let's understand that metaphor. The throne of glory means, now remember, God has a throne? The Bible speaks of God having a throne. What, does this divine universal mind need a place for it to sit down? Remember, the universal mind has no physical form and therefore no application of human needs. So to think that God gets tired, he has to rest his legs, and therefore he's got to sit down in a big old chair? Really? Are we going to get so literal in understanding the divine throne? Are we going to then start to speculate whether the divine throne is upholstered? Gee, what kind of upholstery is on the divine throne? Right? Does it have a high back, a low back, right? Does it have a recliner to it? I mean, you know, we can go with ridiculous types of exploration. This is what happens when we want to take the symbolic and mistakenly interpret it to be literal. That should be a thou shalt not, something we should never do. So to understand the nature of the realm of what we called Atzilut, the creator, that is the realm of the divine. The divine sends a small spark of itself into creation. And that is the beginning of the domain of the collective human mind, human souls, which, mind you, is still in a domain above the heavens and the earth. And this dilution or descent of the ultimate divine creator into this lower realm is symbolically referred to as a lowering of itself, which is the symbolic concept of a throne, symbolically as if God seats himself. So a essence of God comes down. That's the symbol. That's what it actually means. So this is the relationship of the two domains, the domain of the divine called Atzilut, the domain of the souls we call Birya. But the nature of the universal mind, when we refer to the light, the delusion of the light, let's not just get stuck on the symbolism of light. All right, think of it. You can have a 1,000-watt light bulb, dilute it down to a 100-watt light bulb, dilute it down to a 10-watt light bulb. Okay, I got that. But what exactly are we talking? What is light? The mind. The universal mind. The human soul. The source of the soul, the collective human mind, is high and sublime. It's above heavens and the earth. If we could tap into that deeper realm, into the collective unconscious, we can tap into deeper domains of inner wisdom, renewal, enlightenment, and the like. And that's exactly what we do. And when we complement that with rational intellectual pursuit of the outer world, then we unite the inner and the outer worlds. And that's, of course, the whole concept of yichud, or unity, of which we speak about being so important in the Kabbalistic tradition. Moving right along. What comes next is called, that this realm of souls itself is cloaked within another light. And this light we call the domain of the angels. This domain of the angels, right? It says here again, She'od yesh or acher b'tzorat Adam. Again, it's in the image of man, meaning not that it's in the image of Homo sapien, but the image of the 10 sephirotic pattern, the image of God in creation. Remember the name of Yud Kei Vav Kei of Ma. And this we call the domain of the messengers. The messengers, of course, we call the malachim. Now, it's always been an interesting question. Are humans higher than angels or lower than angels? And it's an interesting point of view. Because from our present physical Homo sapien status, we are clearly and definitively less than the energetic beings who we refer to as angels. But yet the source of the human soul is clearly of a higher domain. So you see, our lower selves are lower than the angels, but our higher selves are higher than the angels. Now remember, the word angel is such an English word. It doesn't give, or I shouldn't say, it doesn't do justice to our understanding of who these malachim are. Well, let's interpret and understand the original Hebrew term. A malach is a messenger. What does the messenger do? Well, the messenger goes around and does the work. How does the messenger get the message? Well, God sends the message. Yeah, and the message goes down the chain of command. So the message, purpose, will of creation, the way of things, emanates from the unknowable God to God known in creation, emanates into the domain of the collective souls. And then through the collective souls, it emanates into the hands of the messengers. And these messengers, this domain of the angels, we says in exact detail in every which way, to that which is above it. These messengers bring down the energy, execute the will, the purpose, the function of what we can call everything in heaven. These messengers correspond to that level which we refer to as the heavens. And that's why we say the angels are in heaven. They are the energy forces, the conscious entities that are behind the operations of our known universe. And they exist as actual entities in the context of their own domain, in the context of their own dimension, in the context of their own universe, and interact and operations with our universe. And yet, of these messengers, there is also another level of garment, as it's called, which is external to them. And this is called, again, a light, all right, outside the light of the domain of souls. And what is this light? It's very small, but it's called the dark light. And we say here that it is all harsh severities. And from this domain come forth what we call the klipot, or the husks, or the shells, in each and every world. And they are as a garment which cover over the domain, the light of the domain of the angels. And it's again in the exact same, what we call image of man, etc., and so on. This is what we call the forces of evil, the dark side. They are part and parcel of, cloak to, cling to the messengers. They are, if you will, those domain of the messengers, that domain of the messengers, whose job it is to carry out, from our human point of view, what we can call the dirty work. Now, if we were to look at nature, the world around us, and ask the old philosophical question, is nature merciful or is nature cruel? I think we would all have to answer in harmony that nature is in fact cruel. One cannot cross Mother Nature. One cannot violate the laws of nature. That is clear as a bell. You do not stand outside with a lightning rod in your hand during a thunderstorm or you will get zapped. There's no mercy there. Even if it's an accident, nature doesn't care. Human beings know mercy. Nature does not. But yet, the harshness and the severities in the natural world are all part and parcel of the operations of the universe. Everything serves a purpose. Everything has its place. It says very clearly in Isaiah 45:7, God is the author of all good and evil. God emanates the forces and the powers. Only we interpret them to be evil. But in God's eyes, they might be something very different. So, moving right along, there is purpose for these, what we call klipot. Our job with the, in quote, dark side is not to battle it, kill it, destroy it, but on the contrary, to shine the light upon it, to make it translucent and transparent. So the light within it can shine through it like a piece of clear glass. This is the refinement process of our human souls here on earth, our confrontation with evil, and our elevation and control of it. So, moving right along, at the outside or external to this domain, we say are the heavens themselves. And the heavens themselves, we say, are the physical domains of each and every realm and world. And he says that these are the body of each and every world. And within each and every body, we say, are these other dimensional planes, one more subtle than the other, until you get to the highest level of subtlety and depth, which we call the Ein Sof. Everything is within. So, you have, again, the Ein Sof, the emanation of the ten Sefirot, then the emanation of the souls, then the emanation of the angels, the emanation of the Klipot, the emanations then of the physical world themselves. And that is the way this works. So, we are here in the physical domain. And things are as they are. Somebody here in text is actually making an interesting point, and I'll bring it up. He's quoting, right? He's given his angels charge over you to protect you in all your ways, right? Ki malachav yitzevei lach lishmarcha b'kol darkecha, which is actually from Psalm 91. And yet, we all know people who believe in God's protection, who believe sincerely in God's mercy, grace, and power, and bad things happen to them. We all know it. It's the story of Job in the Bible. We see it throughout all of history. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. We know it. Why? God knows why. Part of the universal mind knows why. And that emanation emanates and flows down through the higher self. And the higher self knows why. And the angels, therefore, are the messengers, which we say execute these things to make the force and form of these things to materialize. And they do. Why? I will confess, I certainly do not know. I think it was just in this morning's news, I read of a terrible tragedy where in which I believe it was a truck crashed into a limo carrying some women to a wedding, killed four of the women. Terrible, terrible things. Why? My good, I don't know. Well, we can look at the physical causes, accident, negligence, or whatever. But what's the spiritual? What is God's purpose behind all these things? The answer is, your guess is as good as mine. And I don't know if these people in this accident or any other accident were reciting Psalms or not. Sometimes good things happen to bad people. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. We can call it one of those mysteries. And this is why in our Jewish tradition, whenever something like this occurs, we acknowledge our not being able to understand the bigger picture, and we respond by saying, "Blessed be God, the true judge." Because somehow, somewhere in God's eyes, God knows what God's doing. We don't. So therefore, we acknowledge and do the best we can. But we must understand that everything, as what we're talking about here, is like one level overlapping the other level, overlapping the other level, overlapping the other level. Everything is in the direct form of the source. It is a singularity through the entire universe. Even evil conforms to, submits to, and is part of the greater divine plan. The harshness in nature, part of the divine plan. You and I very well might know, going back to my example, if it is a hot and sweaty day, and you might be very uncomfortable outside, well, that's the way of nature. But God has not forbidden us knowledge of technology to make air conditioning. I believe that, as we say in our prayers, Ata noten la'adam dat umelamed la'enosh bina, you give to man knowledge and teach man understanding. If we are technologically capable, it is because God has given us consciousness. That is not in contradiction to nature, but what we call a tikkun, a rectification, a betterment of. You see, everything is part and parcel of the whole. Now, why is this important? Because we can't. There is no guarantee that bad things don't happen. Sometimes, somehow, some way they do. But we have knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And when we use this internal image of God within us to look at our environment in time and space, we make repairs. We choose courses of action which lessen the negative types of consequences which we do not desire. And therefore, we remove from ourselves all types of potential negative applications. This is why God gives us intelligence,
so that we can do this. God doesn't do it. God does it through us. This is our obligation. So we look to make things better. But we recognize that everything is still part and parcel of the whole. So continuing, he says, within then we have the body of the physical worlds. And within the physical worlds, we have all of what he calls here the toledot ho'olam ha'hu, the generations of that world, which means the elements or the laws of nature that are applicable. And he says these also include within them all the other aspects. Now we know what the laws of nature are in our physical universe. We're learning them. V'ki kol achad mehem yesh lo koach hanimshach min harakiim. That each and every element and power within our domain, our world, has a power to it which emanates from the heavens, which are its form. What does that mean? That the nature of our physical universe defines the natural laws of the universe. In other words, why is the universe the way that it is? Right? Why is it? Why do we have planets? Why do we have suns? Why do we have air? Why do we have energy? Well, all of these things. Let's go back to understanding science. Let's understand it from the context of the Big Bang. If you remember the Big Bang, everything was energy. And then energy congealed and eventually formed subatomic particles. Then the subatomic particles formed atomic particles. Atomic particles formed atoms. Atoms formed molecules. Molecules divided up into create cells, and on and on and on it goes. Why? It is following, obviously, some preconceived notion, some pattern, which we call natural law. This natural law is the foundation of everything that's the construct in this universe. If we had a different universe, the end quote will behind it might have formed that original energy differently and might have created a completely different universe based upon completely different physical laws. We can try to imagine them, but being that it is so outside of our context of experience, all we can do is imagine. But we might be dealing with realities far above our imagination to conceive. Like God said to Moses, no man can see the face and live. But all these other parallel universes, all these other dimensional planes exist. Our teachings are that they have within them the same complexity, the same unity, and the same completion as each and every one, and one is a reflection of the other, and everything fits into the greater harmony of things. Ki kol achad, as we said, everything emanates from this. Ubetocho or adinim, and within each and every one is, we call here, the light of judgments. Call it, if you will, the laws of nature, which are the strict and rigid structures which define the natural law. And within it are the messengers which execute those laws. Now, remember, the messengers who execute the laws, are these like actual physical guys operating some kind of physical machine? I don't think so. But they are intelligent forces whose job it is to move and manipulate the forces of the universe so as to, using our concept and terminology, open certain doors and close others. And that's the nature of things. And they themselves are influenced by another higher light, which we call the light of souls. And within the souls is the light of the ten sefirot,
which is inside them and gives them life. V'oto ha-koach ha-nimshach me'or matzav ha-neshamot. Now hear this. The light, the energy, the force, the will, which emanates from this realm called the domain of souls, the collective, the source of collective humanity, which again we refer to as the world of Bereah, we call it the throne of glory, we say it's above the heavens and the earth. This is the collective source of our humanity, our higher selves, your higher self, my higher self, are not separate as you and I are physically. I do not know you. You do not know me. You and I are in physical different bodies. We obviously, we all know that. Yes? Yes. You have DNA. I have DNA. You have a hand. I have a hand. Your hand is not my hand. Your leg is not my leg. Right? I cannot think and move your hand to scratch your nose, my nose, whatever. It's silly to talk like that. We understand the concept of divisions at the physical level. What I reveal to you now is that that division does not exist in the realm of souls. In the realm of souls, we are all said to be part and parcel of the greater super soul. You and I, or let me rephrase that, your higher self and my higher self, symbolically speaking, are like individual cells in the greater higher body of collective humanity. We are part of a hive mind. We are a race of souls which are right now fractured, divided against one another by the limitations of the conscious mind and physical form. But ultimately, we are connected as one. And that higher source of ours, which is our higher selves, your higher self, my higher self, places a spark of its self in this physical body, and this spark comes into this physical body to create this conscious mind, this conscious identity, which makes me, me, and you, you, for a purpose. We are here because this dimension, this domain, this world is for us school. We are here to learn. School's in. All right? We're here to learn. Well, what am I here to learn? Well, everybody's here to learn a different lesson. This is why we have instruction. Oh, by the way, what do we call instruction in Hebrew again? Oh, that's right, Torah. So by following Torah and understanding Torah, instruction, guidance, the way, we recognize, know, and learn the lessons that we've come here to do. So the guide, the instruction, comes down to us from our higher selves. It drips down, if you will, flows down the pipeline. The higher selves ordain as the hand of God or the thought of God in it directs. And then the higher self instructs the powers behind the natural world to create the form and structure in the natural world to enable this to be. Those forces are what we call the angels, the messengers, some of which are what we call the klipot, come through the dark side, and eventually to materialize into the force and form which things will materialize in this physical world. This power, this energy, this source which drips down to us is called the dripping down. In Hebrew, it is called
your mazal. Now, mazal, in many a time, is referred to as one's astrological influence, right? You're born under the stars, and therefore the stars influence you. Well, that's not necessarily the case. We understand astrology to definitely have influence. The Bible clearly does say so. But it is not a fortune-telling practice which can predict the future. Let's explain real quickly. To understand the power, it works like this. God ordains. That is, ordination is perceived in the higher self. The higher self then passes down the higher will into the hands of those energy forces in the heavens and the earth, which will then bring about the materialization of this in physical form. Well, those energy forces actually are the ones who control all the energies in the heavens and the earth, the physical universe as well. The physical universe, again, we call the Reki'in, the heavens, the physical heavens. And the physical heavens are full of energy. Matter of fact, we think of outer space, empty space. No, it's not. All energy. Cosmic energies. Every single planet, every single star radiates energetic fields. So does our Earth. All of these energetic fields go out into space in great distances. And needless to say, overlap one another. These overlapping energetic fields, our planet goes through them all the time. And human beings on the planet go through them all the time too. And we believe, and this is the foundation of astrology, that those energy fields can influence human consciousness. Influence more so at the human unconscious level. And that the power and the domain of the forces above, as they manipulate and guide and direct the cosmic fields and forces of the universe, and as our planet traverses them, we become subject to them, and they can incline us towards blessing, curse, greater, lesser, whatever. And that is the power of one's mazal. It's not the stars that dictate. The stars, if you will, are just the mechanical hands being moved by a higher force behind them. And that is a person's mazal of our souls here on earth. And the Ben Ish Chaim and Reb Chaim conclude, Hevin Zemeod. Understand this well. Because even though you and I are not going to change the course of the flow of cosmic energies of planets and solar systems and stars, but we very well can become subtly aware of their compulsion or influence upon us. And part of our learning in the school is to choose whether to succumb to them or to take command of our higher power and use the power of mind to overcome, whether it be for good or for evil. In other words, if we find the negative forces, we do not have to succumb to them. If I am by nature naturally an angry person, I do not have to become angry. I choose. That is how we overcome. This is what we're here to learn. And he concludes here, Sheze shebibri'a nikra mazal ha-neshama. As this influence affects the mind, we call that the mazal of the world of Beria, which is the realm of the mind. As this influence is in the realm of emotions, we call that the mazal in the realm of Yetzirah, corresponding to the emotions. And as it affects our physical body, the nefesh level. We refer to that as the mazal of the nefesh. Some of us have, as we all know, genetic inclinations towards this or that. The way of life. Right? The mazal. Can we influence it? Yes, we can. Let's say you have an inclination towards obesity. Well, you can control that with diet. You have an inclination towards cancer. You can control that with all kinds of lifestyle choices. You have an inclination in emotional things. You can choose. Anyway, we've kind of run out of time for this class. But Be'ezrat Hashem, the grace of God, thank God we got the class done. So, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll pick up on this concept and continue this in our next class. Thank you again all for joining me. I'm your host, Ariel Bar-Tzedok. Come see me online at the Kosher Torah School at koshertorah.com. See you all then. God bless. Good night. Shalom.